The Incredibles score is really about things exploding and people hugging.
That was Michael Giacchino, and this is Underscore, a podcast of music and story. Welcome back to Underscore, the show that celebrates the rich tradition of movie music, one film at a time. I am Marty Brueggemann, and with me as always is my brother Will.
We're so excited to continue exploring Michael Giacchino's incredible score to 2004's The Incredibles. Last week, we got our bearings with this music, examining the aesthetic of the score and its origins in the history of film music.
With that groundwork laid, let's jump into the music itself with today's episode, Incredible Themes.
Beyond just delivering loads of swanky style, The Incredibles is a score that will likely leave you humming any of its memorable motives.
And Giacchino's score isn't really competing for largest amount of distinct melodies here, but the central musical statements run throughout the movie and tie the score really tightly together. As we alluded to last week, the aesthetic of Brad Bird's film is not only very strong, but always deeply married to theme.
Right.
The Incredibles is one of those films where it feels like really not a frame is out of place.
I think that's so true, and it absolutely extends to Michael's underscore. What we're excited to explore about today's themes is just how musically distinct they are. These are motives that feel like they could only come out of this film.
You know, we brought up another super movie last week, maybe the godfather of them all, Superman the movie, because John Williams delivered something really interesting in that score. Two themes that both sort of share the throne of main theme. We have... And also, of course,
similarly, in The Incredibles, we also have two super motives for our incredible family. There's and for our purposes, we'll call the first main theme and the second main fanfare. And like in the Superman score, they often work very close together in the movie, side by side, each in a red incredible costume, if you want to imagine.
Well, let's dive right into our main theme. Like many of our great movie themes, this motif has a beautiful intervallic and rhythmic balance.
Yeah, it showcases these heroic, large leaping intervals over much longer rhythms and textures the line with smaller, tight intervals over shorter rhythms.
And also, like many of our most loved themes, it emphasizes a strong upward direction.
Right.
Our opening phrase, ba ba ba, moves upward, leaping a perfect fifth. That's the interval and direction we found so often in the score to E.T. Here it's not only clear and elemental, but it really seems to connote some sort of heroism. And if
right.
you set these first three notes in trumpets or horns, as Michael often does in the score, it absolutely feels like the stuff of heroes.
Yeah, that upward nature we've mentioned before in themes is something that is very triumphant and heroic. It's something that I think can inspire the audience of the characters that are on screen. The Incredibles, in terms of genre, is meant to remind us of old spy movies from the 60s, but we also have to remember that these characters are, in fact, superheroes, and what I think is so great about Michael's theme here is that it both feels heroic, something fit for a super family like this, but it also has that flavor of jazz and blues that complements the rest of the score and the kind of musical world here.
Yeah, absolutely. And the following part of the phrase is almost a perfect contrast to the sort of bold heroism of the opening statement. And this uninterrupted string of notes moves in a relatively faster rhythm, emphasizing quarter note triplets with very close scalar intervals.
Now, while our opening phrase was heroic and tonally more open, only showing the strong, stable, power-chordy tones of the root and fifth, when we spell more detail into the phrase with the second section here, we reveal a decidedly minor tonality.
Yeah, and we're moving upwards once again, but in tiptoes instead of leaps. Almost.
Sure.
And then we turn back around and land on our most unstable note of the melody thus far, the non-chord tone, the second degree.
Exactly. So in this melody, we've moved from bold, unabashed heroism to a more mysterious, dissonant, and questioning following phrase. Because as we said, this isn't just a superhero film, but it's also a spy caper and mystery and something very evocative about those intervals, because I think there's something evocative about the plot and the characters here.
And we close with a phrase that mirrors our opening, but something has changed. We leap up even higher, but instead of sounding more heroic, we actually sound darker. And depending on how it's harmonized in the film, we're either singing a pretty strong dissonance against our one chord or minor one chord, or we're enforcing the strong change in harmony of moving from, say, a minor one to a major six chord.
Looking at the complete phrase, we open confident, bold, and heroic, but then introduce a mysterious and uncertain question, and finally we push to reassert our heroism, but we're changed, I think, reflecting the mystery and the uncertainty. Again, it's remarkable how thematically tight this is to the film. It's an extremely catchy phrase, I think, and is often orchestrated to touch on the visual aesthetic of the movie, but this melody tightly mirrors the central narrative of the film.
In almost a classic three-act structure, a bright, hopeful first act, a conflict-heavy second act, and then a final victory, but with our heroes changed and affected by what's transpired. And we also love how the complete phrase ends feeling almost unresolved, either to
sure.
push us into a repeat statement or modulation, another motive, or something else.
Right. Sometimes even just kind of like a blues progression, like what you get sort of in the end credits or in the main motive,
right.
as you'll call it. But yeah, that kind of push to a modulation is something that's really effective in film music, because you tend to have these short phrases, these melodies that need to kind of cadence quickly and move on to something else in the score. And by making that a moment of sort of an exaggerated or surprising change of harmony, it can be a very useful tool for a composer to kind of manipulate the emotions of a scene.
Also, ending sort of harmonically unresolved, if we look at that in a narrative way, maybe that unresolved feeling will push us into the sequel, The Incredibles 2.
Which we absolutely can't wait for. That movie won't be in theaters for another year, it looks like, but the first teaser was unveiled recently, and that also makes great use of our main theme.
Let's look at our second motive, what we're calling the main fanfare. This five-note jingle really packs a punch. You could say the DNA for much of the score is in this little motif.
Absolutely. Its rhythms are syncopated and swung, accenting the offbeats. And whether it's swing, bebop, or bossa nova, these rhythms are central to the feel of jazz and to the score, that accenting of offbeats.
And both this sort of jingle or fanfare and the first phrase of the main theme start and end in the same place melodically. But the jingle moves in this sort of playful, cheeky kind of manner as it finds its way to that perfect fifth leap.
Yeah, I think those bluesy and mysterious sounds are very central to Michael's score here. I can't help but be reminded of something I may have mentioned this last week, but Koji Kondo, one of our favorite video game composers, the gentleman who's well known for creating most of the scores to the Super Mario Brothers series and also The Legend of Zelda and many others, a lot of music within those series features frequent theme and variation, and sometimes in some of my favorite instances, you can have two pieces of music that both feel like they have completely individual identity, yet they share some common DNA, some common blood, some skeleton. And that's what I would say about our two principal main themes here today. We have one that feels more, I guess, orchestrally idiomatic, something that is heroic. We talked about hearing it in the trumpets or French horns, but then we have something that feels very idiomatically of a jazz world.
More saxophones or vibes or something.
Yeah, exactly. And even though the rhythms are so different and one has more notes and one has fewer notes, they kind of are two halves of the same coin, I guess.
I think that's so true. And it's really remarkable, as hopefully we'll see in our remaining Incredibles episodes, just all the ingenious ways that Michael's able to kind of alternate back and forth between these two sides of that coin as he spots the movie. Now, often we hear an interesting variant to the fanfare theme. There's sometimes a six-note version that approaches the motif from below. This is actually the first thematic material we hear in the score over the Walt Disney and Pixar logos at the beginning.
That's sort of become a little tradition whenever Michael scores a Pixar film, that he starts the score before the opening titles, just when you're first seeing the logos. In Pixar's latest film, Coco, Michael once again composed the music, and there's this wonderful kind of mariachi variation of When You Wish Upon a Star for the Disney opening titles. And it's kind of all part of this tradition that I feel like started here with The Incredibles.
And who can forget his wonderful opening over the logos for Inside Out, where we first hear that incredible piano theme. Now, the six-note version of the fanfare is typically extended, with the last three notes descending on each repeat. And harmonically, this really emphasizes that sort of cheeky blues character we talked about last week, so popular in the great spy and adventure music of 60s television.
Well, I think also just when we hear it in context in the film, and especially in that end credits version, it almost feels like it functions completely as a B-section. Because while they're similar motives in terms of their DNA, harmonically they function in a different way. And so while one feels like, you know, it's very... it feels like an A-section. It's like a principal melodic statement, and that kind of altered six note variation gets to work as a B theme. But in terms of malleable motivic score material, it just adds another theme for Michael to be able to use and kind of populate the world of The Incredibles. And I think he has great instincts for which theme to use when, and, you know, how many notes you're going to want in a specific moment. And also, I think he's very emotionally in tune with how each theme makes you feel.
Completely. Now, in the five-note version of the fanfare, it sometimes smoothly leads into the second phrase of the main theme. Will was actually just about to hum that kind of rendition. And this sort of adaptability really, I think, makes this one of the most effective film motifs imaginable, really. It can kick off a longer statement of its own. Also, it could imperceptibly turn into the main theme, or it can stop short to punctuate an important moment on screen.
When it does lead to a hard stop, as we may have mentioned before, it's often followed by a really important harmonic sound, one that we talked about at some length on our Harmony of Herman episode for Vertigo. This is that minor major seventh chord, a minor triad with a major seventh degree on top.
And this is another one of those sounds that I think is so not only evocative, but effective at taking us to a very particular place. You know, I think a lot of extended jazz harmony, and I sort of think that this is a shame, but it seems to have dated itself, at least I think with maybe like a mainstream audience. And I think this minor major seventh sound, it does have, in addition to just dark emotional character, it does have sort of a retro throwback quality to it as well.
Right. And what I think is great about The Incredibles overall, though, is it's kind of timeless in the way that a Roald Dahl novel is timeless, where right. there's things about it that feel old-fashioned, and in the case of The Incredibles, specific homages to an era, but it never explicitly lets you know. I mean, in many ways, it feels like it takes place in the future.
I think that's so true. Gosh, just the tone in the world of this film, the words already taken for us, but are just incredible. And yeah, both of us can't wait to watch the movie again. Now, throughout the score, Giacchino takes these elements that we've been talking about, the main theme, the fanfare, the minor major seventh chord, and the syncopated rhythms, and he reinterprets them almost endlessly throughout the movie. Almost every action cue takes a fresh approach using some mixture of these colors, resulting in what we've already described as really an incredibly thematically tight underscore.
Now, even longtime fans of The Incredibles may be tempted to stop there when talking about the thematic material for this movie, because what we describe does get at so much of the score. But there are several other rich themes that Michael composed for central characters, and while they maybe make comparatively few appearances in the film, they are some of Giacchino's most outstanding melodies, in my opinion.
And some of these themes are heard really only once or twice in the film, but they each beautifully fit their respective characters. Early on in the film, when we are first introduced to Elastigirl, we hear this romantic theme.
While you might describe this as lush or even sultry, this is a lovely departure in style from most of the score. Melodically, it's maybe more sophisticated. Rhythmically, it sounds a bit more classical. And in terms of the harmony, it's kind of this modal mixolydian, and it's just very intoxicating. I also find that the string performance, particularly, you know, with the high violins and everything, it also kind of is evoking that same era that the jazz side of The Incredibles is scoring. It almost right. more sounds like, I don't know, something I
in
could
a
imagine.
Summer place
like
a, or something.
Yeah, some Max Steiner, even like a Dmitri Tiomkin kind of score.
Gosh, yeah, absolutely. While the film doesn't offer opportunities quite like this ever again, Elastigirl, a.k.a. Helen, often brings with her small traces of this theme, even if it's just that elegant three-note rhythm. Da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da.
Yeah, it's interesting. I almost get the sense that in this movie, Michael wrote themes for all of these characters, but then maybe just the film didn't allow an abundance of opportunity to use them. You might also praise his restraint, not excessively just quoting themes. You know, I mean, leitmotif is that kind of thing where it can be taken to extremes where every single time a character comes on screen, you hear a motive for them. And there's something about that that in the same way that like Mickey Mousing, it's an effective tool, but right. if you push it too far in a certain kind of film, it might pull away from the drama and start to make it feel a little bit larger than life, which is ironic. I know this is a movie about superheroes, but in the style of all Pixar movies, it's like they're trying to make these heightened supernatural or superhuman ideas feel very human and very central to something we can relate to on a narrative level.
I think that's so true. And the other thing that I think is great about so much storytelling in the Pixar films and all of the Brad Bird films, really there's so much momentum. Characters are changing and put into really trying circumstances. So even if we have a piece of music that might perfectly capture character at the beginning of our story, it would only make sense that they would be transformed and that the music that accompanies them during that experience may have to be very different.
Let's talk about another character who we're introduced to in the prologue. He ends up being quite important in the story of the film, but you might not know it first time watching. He is Mr. Incredible's number one fan, Buddy, who later calls himself Incrediboy. The first element of Incrediboy's theme is this really fun chord motif. Michael really nails the sense of old-fashioned Hollywood adventure with these strong march rhythms and a very cinema-esque third relation chord motif. Here it's from G major to E flat major, and we have that yump-a-bump-a-bump, yump-a-bump-a-bump, kind of like a budding young hero.
Yeah, or a buddy young hero. The orchestration, sorry, that was a horrible pun. We promise to remove those from the show. But orchestrationally, he also really nails the character here. This is very light and delicate. You could even say harmless, set in pitched percussion and winds. This material given to, you know, French horns or something would actually convey a hero of some kind of strength and significance.
I think that's true. And the melody that then follows is very interesting. Rhythmically, it continues that great march-like feeling, but the way it highlights the shifting harmony is almost a little twisted and uneasy. It's something that you could imagine being altered into something more villainous, because it's this kind of curly little theme, ya-da-da-da-da, ya-da-da-da-da, ya-da-da-da-da. But it also feels like somehow it is born out of Mr. Incredible's music.
Yeah, that same flirting with the perfect fifth and then the flattened sixth, which are kind of the emphasized tones of the melody of the main theme, that's something that's explored really from end to end of this score.
It's almost like Back to the Future in that way, where all of the thematic material in the movie has this common point of origin.
Right. And kind of interesting comparing the two movies. We're just shifting those two notes up a half step, because that was flirting between the perfect fifth and the raised fourth, and this is sort of the flirting between the perfect fifth and the flattened sixth.
As the melody of Buddy's theme continues after, you know, as we mentioned, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, it moves into the second statement that introduces kind of a swankier quarter note triplet rhythm. This is another thing that kind of reminds us maybe a little bit of Mr. Incredible's theme, but it delves even further into harmonic unease. If you're at all thinking that this might be foreshadowing something dark for Incrediboy, then Mr. Giacchino has done his job.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of those things that maybe works on a subliminal level, but I just love the care and ingenuity that great film composers can pack into a moment like this. Because years later in the course of this movie, the once devoted fanboy becomes Mr. Incredible's arch enemy. And when we ultimately hear a full thematic statement for the character, it's forged out of this Incrediboy material.
In this persona, it has all the pizzazz of Mr. Incredible, but turned in a different direction, I guess, on the moral compass.
Now, The Incredibles isn't just a family film in terms of market or maybe Netflix category or something, but thematically, it is at its core about the bond and growth of a family, and the incredible children of the family have themes of their own as well.
Now, these two are spotted very sparingly in the movie, but once again are wonderful reflections of each character. There's a beautiful theme for Violet that we first hear when we meet her as she turns invisible to avoid being spotted by her high school crush. As we talked about two sides of a coin, the two children of Bob and Helen Parr couldn't be more different. we have Violet and Dash. And Dash is very precocious, very kind of energetic, wiry kid. He runs all over the place, very high energy. Violet is kind of this awkward teenager. She's very shy. She doesn't want to be noticed. And I think both of their superpowers, it's so fantastic in the movie, they really reflect their personality and the personality of each of their individual themes.
Hey, Tony, do you play football?
Oh, I love football.
Tony, I thought we were going to go swimming.
This is almost a classic Hollywood love theme, opening with that sweeping octave and then kind of carefully turning and tumbling down to its final melodic destination.
And harmonically, it emphasizes an equally classic Hollywood harmony. It moves from its tonic to this extended minor seventh chord on the fourth degree. Somewhat reminiscent, I guess we could say, of like the chord progression to like a Marion's theme or Princess Leia's theme.
Sure.
In this instance, it is a minor seventh chord as opposed to sort of a half diminished chord. But a lot of the same alterations, you know, with that flat six scale degree are really essential to that kind of evocative romantic sound.
It's interesting when we think of what the predominant alteration is, it's that same pitch that we've been talking about. It's that unexpected minor sixth or flattened sixth that we introduce in the main incredible theme.
As lovely as Violet's theme is, it's not really fully heard again in the score. As Violet sort of comes of age and steps into her own, comes out of her shell a little bit, her theme becomes a sweet setting of the main theme because she's an incredible as well. And I think
Absolutely.
Her arc as a character is about embracing who she is.
Perfectly put, I think. We probably shouldn't forget her restless, speedy brother, Dash. When at full tilt, his music is often a variant of the Incredibles material as well. But Michael did seem to compose a perfect little theme for the character, which pokes out a few times in the score.
I love this theme. It's a wonderfully pure, heroic march. In this music, we hopefully see the difference between a childlike Dash and a childlike Buddy. Melodically, rhythmically, harmonically, every element of Dash's theme is optimistic and good. It's like Dash at his best. And it almost seems like a kind of heroic theme that would happen in silent films. It's just, it's so innocent and it totally captures the spirit of the character, but it influences how I think we perceive his character, because the theme is more sweet than, Dash isn't really sweet, because like I said, he's kind of precocious and a little bit of a smart aleck sometimes.
Right.
But the theme is so optimistic and positive, it really makes you root for him. And I mean, he's just a great character. You gotta love Dash.
Absolutely. Well, I think what both of these themes help to reveal is that on the inside, these are really good kids, and that morally, every member of the Parr family is a really good person. You know, and they all have their challenges, and they're not perfect people, you know, and we get to experience them in some vulnerable moments. But I love how Michael's able to really expose almost the soul of this family.
We mentioned with Violet that as her character grows in the film, the main theme sort of becomes her theme as well. And this is really true for every member of the Incredibles family throughout the movie. But as the family reunites in all of their glory and superpower, Michael then transforms the main theme in a really outstanding way. Probably one of my favorite moments in the score here. Let's take a listen.
Our familiar theme has now been so transformed by the events of the film. There's no dark, gritty, brooding harmonic backdrop. This is pure joy and has elements of every member of the family, I think. Violet's inner goodness and her outer courage, Dash's optimism, Bob's sort of swagger, and Helen's wonderful, graceful rhythm we mentioned earlier. The da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, really, by the time our credits roll, we immerse ourselves back in the original character of our main theme and fanfare. But this moment of the family connected in a way they'd never been before is a real highlight of the story and the score for me.
There's something great about experiencing a really confident piece of art. I think in some ways that's the sort of thing we're kind of inexplicably drawn to. Even if we're just walking through a gallery, there's just something confident maybe in a particular piece. We can't help ourselves, you know, we're we're drawn in, we're under the spell. And I think one of the things we so love about The Incredibles, and we could really say about most of the Pixar films, they're produced by a large team of people, but they tend to not have that corporate focus group, you know, market tested kind of feeling to them, particularly right. A movie like The Incredibles. It feels so bold and emphatic, and it's not sort of held back. You know, it's like Dash finally being able to kind of run free and not pretend that he's something else.
Yeah, I gotta say, Pixar, they really know what they're doing. I mean, they know how to tell a story. They know how to make a great movie. And it really can't be described as a formula, because every film has its own distinct flavor. And really, it feels like without fail, they're able to wow and amaze and tell stories that surprise but really tug at the heartstrings. And I mean, I recently got a chance to see Coco, and it's incredible. I mean, at this point,
I
can't be surprised anymore with another fantastic Pixar movie. But I mean, Marty, yeah, you got to see it. You're gonna love it, because it's about music, and oh god,
you know, I might just turn off the microphone and run to the movie theater.
I hope you should, man.
We really hope you've enjoyed today's episode. We've had such a blast exploring these themes. I think there's been a great mix of themes that fans of The Incredibles know and love, and some really under-celebrated gems. Actually, for instance, the Violet's theme is unavailable on any soundtrack or even bootleg of the score. What we played comes from sort of a rip of the rear surround channels. We always love when we get an opportunity on the podcast to maybe shine a light on something that could get even a little more attention.
Completely. Well, in underscore fashion, we'll be back with you next week for another installment of our spotting session, which will be really exciting, where we'll go through every single cue in the film and talk about its context and the overall narrative, all to prepare for in 2 weeks when we have our sixth underscore commentary track, where we watch the movie and talk about it live to picture.
I'm getting almost giddy thinking about it. If you have any thoughts, questions, comments, or concerns, please feel free to drop us a line, theunderscoreshow@gmail.com.
If you're enjoying the show, we'd really appreciate it if you were to rate and leave a review at Apple Podcasts. It helps new listeners find out about Underscore. We'd be much appreciated.
Underscore is made possible thanks to our Patreon producers, including Jean-David Blanc, Charlie McCarran, Stuart Folks, BJ Crawford, Matthew Berry, Alex Death, Desmond Clark, Jordan Kolosinski, Travis Anderson, and Jackie Brueggemann.
You can follow us on all manner of social media, Facebook, YouTube, and you can follow us on Twitter @__show.
The second underscore is silent.
Until next time, everybody.
And remember, we listen because we love. Take care. Underscore is part of the Mercado Brothers Podcast Network.